Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're all so mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
King, you got to have a scimitar thrown at you by some moistened bink. So we're back and we've had technical difficulties. Somebody talk. Don't everybody jump to the microphone at once. I wouldn't want anybody to chip a tooth. Don't worry about that noise in the background. That's me.
Yeah, we're coming through. You're such a nice guy.
Yeah. So, talk.
See this? Newsflash, newsflash. Dublin has some information from the darkest parts of the regions of the earth about HHO. Are you there, Dublin? Speak now or forever hold your peace. I guess we caught him on the hop.
Hey, Dublin. Well, Larry's got an announcement to go.
Yes, Larry has something very important to say.
Now, we've been real interested in graphene recently, and a chemist friend of mine explained to me the dangers of it. Graphene is a finer crystalline structure than asbestos, and supposedly it's so fine that it won't even cut your DNA. So you can't breathe it, you can't touch it. I do not know of anything that will even go through glass. It's so fine. I don't know of any way to handle it that is not detrimental to humans. And once we start using it and it goes into the landfills, that's going to degradate and get into the atmosphere. We need to rethink graphene.
Now, Larry, I asked you earlier about graphene supercaps and the variety of different principal technologies that people were talking about. Does that include that as well?
Yes, it does. As soon as they start to degrade, that graphene is going to get into the atmosphere, and it's so fine it will be carried around the Earth.
Everybody will have something worse than asbestos poisoning.
Exactly.
Wow. That's pretty deep, man.
Now, on the level of toxicity, how would you rate this against things like plutonium and uranium? Obviously, it's a different poison, but, I mean...
It's a different poison, but it's much finer, and it goes everywhere. I mean, once it gets into the atmosphere, the jet stream is going to carry it around the world. So... it's only a matter of time before everybody is infected by it. If it'll go through glass, if it's so fine that it will cut your DNA, then we don't have any material that it will not go through.
Well, you heard it here first. Yeah. I mean, when they start producing graphene products under government license, let's not forget who bought us thalidomide and asbestos.
That's it.
You can trust your government.
Yeah, you can always trust your government. So with that said, you know, there's some really good technology there for picking up radiant energy that could be going by the wayside. But never fear, there's other technologies out there that we're still working on as far as plasma technology, and I keep saying this, but I don't think anybody's listening, that we already have every single piece to the puzzle to literally create a alternative energy device. And if I could get everybody on the same page at the same time in the same building and just build it, it'd be a done deal. You know, but...
On the back of that, it's like having a 5,000-piece puzzle with no picture to go from. And that to me, is the fundamental point of Knights of the Round Table, Mad Science, Awake Radio, even... what's the guy in America? He does the Coast Radio as well. I mean, all of these people are out there trying to build a picture for us.
Yeah.
But... I believe, Dublin, you're back with us, mate.
I've seen people do exactly what you were talking about. I've seen them take 500-piece puzzles and take them all apart and then put the puzzle together upside down. In other words, no picture. I've seen that done.
Yeah, but it takes a long time, mate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, long time.
Hey, Dublin, are you here?
I think Dublin's trying to join us.
Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dublin.
You were telling us about...
Yeah, go ahead.
So you were telling us about a breakthrough with HHO technology.
looks like a breakthrough. I can't swear to you. I only got the link a few days ago when I signed up to a HHO website in Manila, which is somewhere near Singapore. It's part of the Philippines. And the name of the link is, aquatune.com. Anyway, Aquatune seemed to have cracked the problem, best as I can figure out. I haven't been able to figure out all the details, but they're using about 10 watts of energy to create 1 liter of hydrogen and oxygen.
Is that per hour? Per second?
That's per minute.
Oh, yeah. Per minute.
The average industry level seems to be about 140 watts. For 1 liter of HHO per minute. You know, it varies, but, you know, between 200 watts and the best I've seen is 120 watts. But they're right down to 10 watts.
Sweet.
Yeah. Now, what you have to bear in mind is 1 liter of HHO only gives you about 5 watts of energy.
You know, the ratio.
So, I mean, even at 10 watts, you're using twice as much energy to make the hydrogen and oxygen as what you're getting out in energy terms. I mean, it's, but it's still a hell of a jump from 120, the best I've ever seen is 120 watts, you know, down to 10 watts. For 1 liter per minute.
I still think to differ with your wattage output of using the HHO to make electricity. I differ with that big time.
Yeah, well, you see, this is the bugbear of HHO. It's you're always, as far as the technology is concerned in this time, putting more energy into breaking the water molecules apart than the energy you're ever going to get out of it.
Well, you know, it's all in the delivery system because Stan Myers did it. I mean, he had the dune buggy.
It's all in magnetics.
He had the dune buggy. He was riding around in town on that thing, man. And, you know, he was doing it on demand.
I don't know, but early miners must have been producing HHO for less than 5 watts per liter per minute.
Okay, wait a minute. I'll ask a question. You said the electrical production of the use of the HHO is only 5 watts. Now, how are you using the HHO to produce that 5 watts?
No. If you burn a liter of HHO, your average liter of HHO, the most energy you can get out of it is 5 watts. So if you're trying to turn that into electricity or something else, you'll probably be lucky to get 2 watts of power out of it.
That's exactly my point. How about making electricity with HHO and not burning?
Well, then you're going to have a problem because you're going to put in more energy. Even with this new system, you're going to put in at least twice as much energy than the energy you can possibly get out, probably 3 or 4 times much more energy. However, HHO for generating electricity is not normally where it has its success. Mostly in the internal combustion engine because the efficiency of the internal combustion engine is pretty low. I mean, you're lucky if you're going to get 20% out of your average car engine.
Well, I think that all is because of the way they do the injectors. And like I said, once again, if Stan Myers is running around in his dune buggy, he must have figured out the injectors. There's actually people out there that are duplicating the injectors that he used. And he also had a circuitry by which to time this out just right. So, you know, with your average internal combustion engine, you're wasting a lot of fuel. That's why they have a catalytic converter on there. The only thing a catalytic converter for your car is a reburner of waste fuel to clean your exhaust up.
80% of the petrol that goes into your gasoline that goes into your car engine
will exit still burning, and that's why you're lucky at best to get 20% efficiency out of your car engine, because of the way gasoline fuel is quite slow burning. Now, what the HHO does is it has a very fast flame front, and because of that, it speeds up the burning of the fuel, so that the petrol fuel, you might get 30 or 40% of the petrol burnt up and improve your, or the gasoline burnt up and improve your overall efficiency of your car engine. So this looks to me like why they're getting what appears to be very interesting increases in miles to the gallon, 30, 50, 100% with this AquaTune.
Larry,
investing large amounts.
It's not about using HHO to make electricity without burning the HHO, and then collecting the HHO and burning it in a different apparatus. Which would actually...
No, this is... Yeah,
if
this is...
Make sure to make electricity to...
Yeah, no, this is purely about increasing the amount of miles to gallon of your car. Basically, it looks to me like the only product which I've seen that looks like it really will give you 30, 40, 50% increases in miles to gallon.
Okay, that's good. But now, let's make the HHO cheaper. Simply by using the electricity to make the HHO, use the HHO to make some of the electricity back, then take the HHO and put it in the automobile. I'm just talking about cheaper.
Yeah, that would be the holy grail. But well, that's what we're all trying to work on. But you know, there are people out there.
That's like,
yeah,
I've got a method that I'm going to try, and I'm pretty sure it's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, there are people out there in the audience who want a solution today. You know, they're saying, look, if, you know, I'm spending $100 a week or $200 a week on gasoline, and if I could get an immediate 30% saving, you know, that's $30 a week or $60 a week saving. And this gadget looks to me, you know, from what I've seen of it, that it can realistically do this kind of level of returns.
Well,
I haven't seen other gadgets that do it because they're using way too much power. So the power you're using to put in through your alternator is so great that it's taking away the power that you're getting saved by the burning the hydrogen with the petrol.
There's a system from Indonesia that's splits hydrogen at 0.05 amps at 12 volts.
Yeah, but you have to look at it in terms of watts. It's 12 watts by 0.5. Yeah, that'd be 6
watts. By
0.05.
By 0.05.
Yeah, 0.05. Okay, that's one-tenth of, 0.05. Okay, that'd be something like a half a watt to make that'd be
a,
for a liter. That's
six
for a liter.
0.6 watts.
Yeah, 0.6 watts. But would that be a liter then?
Yeah, a liter a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, a liter per minute. Oh, well, I didn't know about that. That's interesting. Now, have you got a link on that Indonesian crowd?
It's Hydrogen Force in Indonesia.
Hydrogen Force in Indonesia.
And
any idea, are they, has anybody ever checked them out? Are they for sure telling the truth? Or what?
Oh, yeah.
Or
oh, yeah. They send all of their stuff over to Europe to have it tested and verified. That's their generation 7.
The HHO market is so full of products that, you know, trying to find anything, most of them will be using, you know, at least 150 watts per liter per minute.
That's when they use a PWM. You don't need a PWM to make hydrogen.
Yeah, what do you reckon you need?
Straight current to the car battery. Straight DC and magnetics.
straight DC and magnetics. And before long, it's going to be straight magnetics with no current whatsoever.
Yeah, if you're trying to polarize the water molecule, why shift it back and forth with AC or pulses? Keep it straight.
Yeah, you can't shift it back and forth. That constant rebuilding of the field messes everything up.
Yep. And it it reacts just like if you take AC and then you add DC to it, what you have is a DC ripple. Okay? But when you put it through a transformer, what you wind up getting out is AC again. And it does the same thing with polarization of the molecules of water. It senses up and down and up and down, so keep on switching back and forth.
That's right. That's why it's got to be straight, flat wave DC.
Nobody. It's the magnets that do the polarization and make it easy to split. It's a trick to do it and everything. I mean, we go into I'm sure Larry'd like to go into detail, but basically it's keeping it straight and constant. That way you're not trying to put your oxygen and hydrogen back together again and then pull it back apart again.
Guys, I just would like to say, Dublin, you're talking about accepted technologies for producing hydrogen, stuff that's already there that people have experimented with.
Yeah, basically, it looks commercial, looks like it's within the frame, that if you buy it, it should do what it says on the box, give you 20, 30, 40% savings on your gasoline, which for most people is adequate for their immediate requirements. But needless to say, the ideal solution would be what Mayer's had, where you just throw water in and you get 200 miles to gallon. When you break the water into, you know, its component parts, and there's no petrol or gasoline or anything involved in the whole equation, you're now off the grid, as I say.
The thing is, if you look at industry tell you anything on free energy or green energy or renewable energy, they're telling you that they always way overrated, way far, like a 1.5 kilowatt wind turbine. Now, in 10 mile an hour wind, it's doing 25 watts. They're rating it at 36 mile an hour wind, something you don't have all the time. So when they tell you, oh, you're going to get this much out, or you're going to get that much out, they're usually rating it by their standards that they want to pick at any time, at best, or laboratory conditions. So, yeah, they can put a whole bunch of these HHO things on the market and say you're going to get this much out of it, but you don't see it. Not unless you go drastic.
Okay, it all depends on your traffic situation as well. When you spend 2 hours a day in a traffic jam, you're going to get lousy mileage. And that's where the Indonesian people get up to 50% increase in mileage, because their traffic is the worst that I've ever seen.
Dublin, I've got a technical question about it. You seem to know a lot about it. At what pressure does HHO self-ignite? In other words, if you were to take it and put it in a pressure bottle, like an oxygen bottle or whatever, and pressurize it, at what pressure does it self-ignite?
I should put it in
4,000
pounds.
Yeah, my information is that it has a high octane. If you were to run an engine on pure hydrogen and oxygen, it would be a high octane level of 130. So you would probably need an engine that would be a compression ratio of 25, 30, 40 to 1. A very high compression engine.
I'm not talking about it. An engine, I'm talking about putting it in a pressure bottle and pressurizing it.
Kind of like a diesel engine does, right, Filner? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I don't have any information on that. I've never looked at that, but I would imagine you probably have to get up some pretty serious compression ratios to make it self-ignite.
The original hydrogen cars that were fuel tanks stored them at 4,000 pounds.
Wow. Okay, and then that question pertaining to my first question. If you put a Joe cell in your water with your electrolyte and seal it, how much pressure would it build? Is it possible to get up to 25 or 30 PSI?
I don't, you see, nobody ever does that, because if you've got hydrogen and oxygen mixed together, it's very explosive. You know, like your slightest anything and you're going to get an explosion.
That's
the whole idea. The whole idea what they're doing with hydrogen and oxygen is the moment they generate it, they're sticking it into the engine to explode it, because trying to compress hydrogen and oxygen together is just never done.
I still think everybody in the doggone mainstream, I still think they're going about it the wrong way. I think they know how to do it the right way. I believe it has to do with the injectors, for one. You know, the atomization of any fuel, if you send your gasoline in a liquid, you're obviously going to get waste fuel coming out the exhaust. And so if you atomize that as much as you possibly can before it ever goes in there, atomized gasoline would combust and burn up all the fuel, as opposed to, you know, just some of the fuel. You wouldn't have no waste.
If I can bring you back to Charles Nelson Pope, do you remember I brought to the Mad Science Show a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
He's about a guy in 1936 that created an evaporated carburetor that purported to give you 200 miles per gallon.
Well, I believe it.
I wrote about that in Popular Mechanics.
Yeah,
1936. It was 1934. He invented it, patented it. In 1930, they installed it on a 1935 Ford coupe. It was tested by three testing laboratories in Canada. One was in Winnipeg. The other was Ford Motor Company, and then was another independent testing laboratory. One of them got 107 miles to the gallon. Another one got 109, and another one got 112. The one that did 107, they admitted that they were bucking a 35-mile-an-hour wind the entire test.
Yeah, but there's a problem with that, because they were using a totally different gasoline than what we use today.
But even at that, the
gasoline they started using originally in the 1920s and so forth was really Coleman's gas. You can buy that in your hardware store. If you go down, it's a clear liquid. It burns very hot, but it has one fundamental problem. It is a low-octane fuel. It's only a 70 RON. So you can't use a high-compression engine with it. It can only take a compression level about 6 to 1 before you get pinging and self-detonation. The gasoline, I mean, they were not joking. You open the lid of a Coleman gas in a garage, you're going to fire the flame at the other end of the garage. Within a couple of minutes, the fumes coming out of that can will reach across the garage, be ignited, and go back to your bottle of Coleman.
You're absolutely 100% correct about the octane. A lot of people don't understand octane. They think it makes your fuel burn hotter. It does not. It makes it burn slower. It causes it to evaporate slower. Pure gasoline will evaporate at like 90 degrees. In fact, it'll evaporate completely gone like alcohol at 75 degrees. Slower, but it will. It boils at less than 120 degrees.
That made it easy in the old days to make a carburetor that would basically turn the gasoline into a gas and then put it into the engine. But the oil companies put in stuff to sabotage that. And so the marketing fuel is very heavily impregnated with stuff that's incredibly slow burning, and it'll never burn up before it leaves the engine.
Well, I still believe that even with the lousy gas that they sell today, if you atomize that into a super fine mist, as opposed to when the injectors are sending in a jet of fuel, if you ever watch an injector spray fuel out, it's a liquid. You know, they're putting too much fuel in there. And you see the race car drivers all the time tuning these cars up to get crazy speeds out of these cars. And so they know that they can do it to some extent with a race car. You could do the same thing with a standard car.
Yeah, the main deal was to get rid of the vapor and go into fumes with Charles Nelson Poe.
Yeah, exactly.
A spiral of material, and it was a little thick, and in between the fabric was a very fine space that all the air went through, all the way till it spiraled and made it to the inside, and all the fuel was just nothing but fumes. They had to actually add a little bit of oxygen to it as well, and all that was regulated to efficiencies on what speed and what your intake is.
Well, I know.
There's no doubt about it. If you can vaporize the present fuel, you will burn more of it. With the amount of contaminants that's in the present modern gasoline and the short time frames that an explosion's taking place, you're unlikely to get all of the fuel to ever burn up. Particularly as some of the contaminants seem to be deliberate, as best as I can see, it's really oil waste. Once you get oil waste, you put it into the gasoline. You know, it's the old trick of you buy flour and it's full of wood dust. You know, you pump it up. And that's what they've done with gasoline. They put in all this oil waste, which helps increase the octane and slow the burn down, and half the fuel is burning so slow as it exits the engine that it has to be burned up by the catalytic reactor.
And low-grade alcohol.
Yeah, well, low-grade alcohol is another subject in itself, but that's another way of helping the octane, increasing the octane. Alcohol is normally about an octane of about 100. The alcohol tends to burn cleanly, even if it exits the engine, continues to burn when it comes out the tailpipe. Even if there is any type of alcohol coming out the tailpipe, it will go into the atmosphere and break apart. It's not a very toxic product.
But when they started adding that alcohol to our fuel, it didn't increase our octane. What it meant is it could dissolve more water and it could sell more water to you.
Well, that's true, but
well,
it was also put... It's an oxygen carrier. It has oxygen in the
molecule. Yes. And the oxygen is the only thing that'll carry the electrons, actually.
Yeah, well it's mostly put in... It's called to oxidize fuel. If you can put oxygen in the fuel, you can get a better burn. And that... to lead additives. So believe it or not, the pressure ratio on the old cars in the 60s was higher. It was about 10-1. But when they got rid of the lead additive, they had the problem of thinging. So they added in alcohol, but they still had to bring the pressure ratio down to 8-1 for most cars.
And Dave just had...
All right, so what do you guys think about this idea? In your modern day, somebody talking? In your modern day engine, and you got, let's say you're going with a six-cylinder, and they're all timed out to each one of the pistons to fire at a separate point in time. If you're getting waste fuel coming out of one cylinder via the exhaust, what's to stop you from jetting that exhaust into the cylinder next over and igniting it a second time and doing this for all the different cylinders? You see where I'm coming from here? So
Look that up on the YouTube. You'll find what's called the five-stroke engine, and it does precisely that. You have three pistons. Two of them are working like four-stroke pistons, and the one in between the two of them is taking the exhaust, recompressing it, and exploding it, and recycling it. And that five-stroke engine, as a result, will have a better efficiency. But that five-stroke engine, the middle piston, will fire as a two-stroke piston rather than a four-stroke, and the other two pistons will be four-stroking. But it's quite complicated. The BMW solves the problem by taking the exhaust and recirculating it back into the engine quite often five times. And that has given them...
Probably.
very high miles per gallon, but it's still not burning all the fuel.
Dublin, isn't that the principle of the GEAT system, reprocessing exhaust?
Yeah, that's the BMW does that. It takes, as soon as the pistons finish firing and it goes out the exhaust, it's recirculated back into the air intake and swallowed back into the engine.
But isn't that what Paul Pantone was trying to do with his GEAT system?
I don't know if that's exactly what he was doing with GEAT, but GEAT is more where you break the water into hydrogen and oxygen with this series of magnets and the special exhaust and so forth.
Yeah, reheating the exhaust and taking it back in, plus other materials, taking it right back into the carburetor with the heat from the exhaust.
Yeah, but it really looks like a GEAT system. All he's really doing is he's taking a fuel like petrol and he's vaporizing the lighter elements, and that if you check the fuel tank after so many hundred miles, you'll find that all the heavier elements are staying in the tank and accumulating there. So I don't think GEAT is really... What he's doing is he's turning the petrol into the old-fashioned petrol, and the old-fashioned petrol, which is your coal mine fuel, is going into the engine, burning quite happily and giving you a higher miles per gallon, but the other stuff, which is heavy and doesn't burn, is staying in the water whatever you call it, mix, and part of it is the heat is breaking the hydrogen and oxygen into hydrogen and oxygen, and that's also helping. So it's a kind of a combination of different things that are going on.
All right, how about this idea? Where the injectors actually go into the intake portion of it before the fuel actually gets injected into the motor itself, what if you have a vapor chamber after the injector? So you inject the fuel in a fine mist in a vapor chamber and pressurize that vapor chamber to, at the right time, open up the valve and inject it into the cylinder so that you're only putting the amount that you need to burn in that cylinder in order to get that to fire.
Yeah, there's some engines that do something like that. It's like a little bowl on the top of the piston, and it's injected, the fuel air mix is injected into the bowl, and then that will bleed out of the bowl into the piston chamber area. So you get like two-stage burning. You get burning in the bowl, and that fires the stuff into the piston area and pushes it down. How successful that is, I don't know, because I haven't particularly researched it other than I know it exists. But it's quite complicated.
Well, it'd be a lot easier if we just go back to some decent fuel or get Stan Meyer's work out there on the market.
Well, that's what some people are doing. If you look up a video in, I think it's... what's that other place that's not quite a state? Puerto Rico or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, they can't buy Coleman's fuel in the hardware shop. I think it's like $6 a gallon in America. In Europe, it's quite often you can only buy half a liter, and it costs you something like $30 a gallon. So it's not an option to do Coleman's fuel.
So I wonder what it is in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, well, what they do in Puerto Rico is they get the petrol or the gasoline and they heat it up and they distill it off, and then they are left with about 20% crud, and the rest is your Coleman's gasoline. And it's how to make your own Coleman's gasoline.
Excellent.
Yeah, but it's one way of blowing your kitchen to bits. You know, I mean, yeah, your second half might be happy with the smell of petrol fumes all over your kitchen.
Don't do it in the kitchen.
Air brake like that, do it outdoors. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm into burning the alcohol instead when I'm cooking.
Yeah, well, that's alcohol is always a safer fuel to work with at the best of times.
I went camping one time and I had some Coleman fuel, you know, and one of the branches poked into the can. I had it all over me. I was like a real sore callus all the way down my backside. I swore I'd never carry Coleman fuel again. That's why I got into them alcohol gasification cook stoves. Man, you can pour that all over your head and everything. As long as you're walking forward, you won't suffocate, you know, because you're getting new air to your nose. You can pour it all over your whole body, a couple sparks, you know, sting. But you know what? It leaves no scar, no rash looking, nothing. It doesn't do anything to you. Matter of fact, it probably keep you from catching something. So, yeah, I'd rather run with the alcohol. But that's getting off the
subject. The alcohol grant half the temperature of Coleman's petrol or gasoline. Coleman's gasoline is incredibly hot-burning stuff. I mean, you just get your lighter fluid, pour it on the table, you know, a bit of lighter fluid, and set fire to it. And you will be gobsmacked how hot the temperature that's coming off that small amount of fuel is.
I put alcohol in my Zippo, and it works.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Marty, you cook with alcohol, I'll just drink it. Both some cooking. All the stuff we made to drink actually burned pretty good in the alcohol stove. Not quite as good.
Well, I'm thinking that if Steve is drinking the alcohol while he's cooking, that at some point the food's not going to be as good.
No. I'm sorry for this, but I had a Chinese lady come to my house a couple of weeks ago to learn how to make muffins. I had two rules. One, you have to wear the right equipment. That means chef jacket and apron. And the second rule is you have to have a glass of alcohol in your hand. You don't have to drink it, but you have to have it.
Well, what if you get so liquored up you're stumbling around and forget some ingredients?
Did she have good muffins?
Exceptionally good.
Wonderful, then. Follow the rule.
Yeah.
That comes down to self-determination. We had a celebrity chef called Keith Floyd. Now, Keith Floyd said that it was 10% ability, 90% knowledge, and 5% alcohol. Yeah. Which makes 105%, so I guess he was giving it all, his all and more.
Anyway, so where do we go from here?
Boomer's got, Boomer and I and Terry were yakking yesterday about making alcohol, ammonia refrigeration stoves.
That was Larry and you and me.
Oh, yes, it was, that's right. Larry, it gave you a breakthrough on a few things, too.
Well, let's hear about it.
The man's a genius.
Yes, he is.
Let's hear about it.
Hear. I'm sorry. I can't help it. Yeah, we're talking about taking some, we looked at the old designs of the old alcohol, ammonia refrigeration. And basically, there's no valves, and there's really no compression. There is pressure, but it's even all the way through after I've done some more reading and everything. And it has to do with separating your ammonia is hydrogen, and hydrogen and nitrogen. And then you're putting it into the water. And basically, when you heat up the ball at the bottom, what it's doing is bringing it up, and then the liquid part of it goes down another tube, while the vapor goes up, and it goes up into the top, and up there it's hot, and it bleeds off some of the heat. Then it goes down into the condenser, and you get your cold off of that, because what's happening there is the water is takes the water out. When it's taking the water out, it does the same thing as evaporation. When water evaporates, it cools. And actually, it's a lot colder than most. But the cool thing is you can run your refrigerator off a candle or some propane with just like a little pilot light or small Fresnel lights. And so we're thinking about playing with that. The only thing is the ammonia is very corrosive. Your copper's going to last maybe 5 years. So we're thinking about porcelain or maybe stainless steel to see how that holds up. Some good high-grade stainless steel. We want to play around with that. And because when the S hits the fan, you know, if the electricity goes down, there's going to be a lot of food going bad for a lot of people. It'd be nice to just grab you one of them candles like Boomer was talking about yesterday. You can go to a garage sale and buy candles all day long. And some of the big fat ones will burn for days. So, yeah, you stick it right up underneath there and just let it go. And your food will be cold. If not, you'll have to knock the ice off it.
I bought a candle in a yard sale one time for 50 cents. Brought it home. The daggone thing burned for 2 days.
Well, you know... Well,
the fridge in my RV, my recreational vehicle, my camper van, yeah, runs off gas. Yeah. That's an ammonia get. That's an ammonia refrigerator. No compressor needed.
The thing is, you still have it, but those ammonia gas refrigerators in RVs, the ones that are rated gas or electric, they're not electric. The electric part is nothing more than
well, this is three-way. It's battery, mains power, or gas.
Right, but the electric, the battery or the power line, is the only heats up a heating element. It does not actually run the refrigerator.
No.
So it's much cheaper just to get a candle and stick under there, don't think.
I'll tell you what, though, it keeps your beer nice and cold.
No. I said my camper years ago would freeze a tray of ice in 45 minutes.
Wow. Yeah. The thing's fantastic.
Yes, they are. That's why I want to try building one.
So with all that said, there are so many different ways by which we could make our appliances so much more efficient, but yet, you know, the industry doesn't want to make an efficient car or refrigerator or anything like that. That's going to be up to the average Joe. So how's the average Joe?
Yeah. It is. I've even been a propane gas microwave.
Well,
wow.
See, that's what I'm saying, man. This is why I get aggravated because I know that everything that we've got out there, mostly our cars, our cars are, if you could get the internal combustion engine to be so super efficient that, you know, you're not wasting fuel through the exhaust or, you know, you're not having to use near as much fuel. You know, you could go out and buy your average generator and modify it a little bit to, you know, run all doggone day off of a gallon of gas. You know, it can be done. I know it can be done.
Yeah. Oh, just a quickie here. Larry, I think Dublin's wanting to know what the name of the HHO people in Indonesia are again. He's not able to connect.
HydrogenForce.com.
HydrogenForce.com. Cool. All right, back to it. You said burning a gallon of gas for days or something, she says?
Well, I'm saying that if you was to modify your average carburetor on any over-the-counter generator, you could get this thing to run all day long off a gallon of gas. There's so much fuel being wasted out the exhaust of an internal combustion engine, it's just crazy. And so, you know, knowing that things will explode faster in the finer the mist, or even into the vapor stage, you're going to get as much or more power out of a vapor than you would be the liquid. And if you look in every single carburetor out there, even fuel injectors are squirting it in. Yeah, they're squirting it in the liquid. So if you could design before the injection portion or even the carburation portion a vapor chamber to where you can pressurize this this fuel into a fine mist and then send it into the cylinder, then you won't use near as much fuel to run the same doggone thing. I mean,
well, that is what we're doing today. We're making a mist, a vapor. What makes it burn really good is spreading it out into fumes.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Basically, no droplets. Yeah,
their mist isn't fine enough. It needs to be finer. It needs to be like, you know, just a vapor coming in there.
You need to magnetize the gas.
Yep.
Well, then, you know, right before that, you have a system to do that, and as soon as the injector opens up for the intake portion of the cylinder, the only thing that goes in there is a vapor. And that vapor is enough to push that piston down as soon as you ignite that spark plug.
If you put a vortex spin on that vapor, it'll go even better.
So
yes, if you put those little ridges just like you do on a rifle barrel.
Exactly.
So who has a good CAD program at their house?
I hate cats.
Not cat, CAD. Like to draw drawings, three dimensional. What we all need to do is sit down with somebody who has a CAD program and design up a new injection system for an internal combustion engine. Pick out any at random, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And do a Skype design call where we troubleshoot this live. You see what I'm saying? Did I lose you guys again?
No, I'm here. Everybody looks like they're still here.
I think Raymond was trying to say something.
Yeah, Scott made the crack about the cat. He fully understood what you said. He was just being Scott.
Yeah, I know.
4.5 hours of radio for me, so that's what happens when I get toward the end.
My question earlier to Dublin about how much pressure does it take to self-ignite the HHO, y'all answered my question when you said something about putting it in an engine, a gasoline engine, which has a spark plug. Well, if you have to ignite it at a 40-to-1 ratio, then evidently it will take a lot of pressure to self-ignite, because otherwise it would self-ignite before your piston even hit the top.
Yeah.
If the fuel is even warmer, it'll ignite earlier and probably give you a little more boom boom.
But if you go, Raymond, if you go back all the way back to the farmers injecting water into their cylinders in their tractors, they were doing that way back then when they got the tractor up to operating temperature. They were injecting water in to save on fuel.
A mist of water.
It works great.
That's called it's called a supercharger.
Yeah, and it worked.
Yeah, it worked. I ran a 6-cylinder, 200 cubic inch rammer of Renault Dauphine for 20 minutes on 5 cc's of gasoline. Using water.
Buddy, if you go back to World War II in England, they used to start the tractor engines with a shotgun cartridge blank and a hammer.
Yes.
Never underestimate the awesome power of a blank shotgun cartridge shell. You can do a lot with it.
Well, speaking of shotguns, I saw this really cool thing in a magazine. They got it's called a redneck plunger for a toilet, and it has a shotgun attached to a plunger head.
To blow your plastic pipes apart.
Yeah, well, either way, that's why they call it redneck.
Yeah, there's a deal back in Germany during the Nazi, what do you want to call it, whatever. But they right towards the end, man, they were so low on fuel, and they was trying to do everything they could for efficiency and all that. And they found that the older fuel wasn't so good, and you know, they're starting to panic. Then they found out if they added a little bit of water to that diesel, man, it ran great.
Well, yeah,
it up really good and put it in the tank and go.
See, diesel fuel doesn't explode like in a gasoline engine. It burns.
It needs the water to carry the electrons.
And so, with that said, it builds up. It has to build up a lot of heat inside them cylinders in order to get that to burn when you send it in a fine mist with the injectors. And so if it can ignite diesel fuel, it could also do the same thing by separating the hydrogen and the oxygen from the water. I mean, they did it, man.
Yeah, well, water doesn't compress too, so that's the other part of the theory, and that's why the supercharger works. Adding a little bit of water, knowing that it's not going to compress when it gets to the top of the engine before it bangs, it's under more compression, then it goes bang, and it makes a lot of difference.
Under pressure turns the water to steam.
Right.
Gasoline and air, when it's compressed and ignited,
expands 450 times its size, where water, when it is turned to steam, it expands 1,600 times its size, which actually the water is almost four times more powerful than gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you don't even need gasoline. All you have to do is get something that will get really super hot super fast.
And I suspect it also turns a little bit into HHO.
It would be a steam engine with steam on demand.
Yep.
Yep.
That's why I think HHO and water is your best bet, because HHO burns so daggone hot. So really, truly, you don't even need compression. You just run your cylinder up the top, you spray in the mist of water, and ignite your HHO.
And some folks were worried about the heat portion of it, that it would get the pistons too hot and melt the pistons. It may be a simple case of just redesigning that piston.
If you're putting in that little bit of steam or mist, that ought to help cool it down.
Yes. The pressures you're talking about, look at that, 150 to 200 PSI in a cylinder. And steam under that pressure would be somewhere in the neighborhood of about 400 or 500 degrees. So that'd be the hottest your motor could ever get.
Oh yeah, Wally. What about your Mentos wheel?
If you make your cylinder walls and your piston and piston rings out of chrome poly steel, you'd have no problem. You could run all day long just by HHO and water. Don't rely on the HHO for your power.
Yeah, chrome moly sleeves on an aluminum block.
Okay, what's it gonna take for us to just build it? I mean, I know we can do it. We got the skills, the technology, and the tools to build it. We could modify an old engine block and prove it. I mean, what would it take to get us all together long enough to do it? Larry's close enough. Raymond's close enough.
That mug and J.P. Morgan.
Buddy's close enough. The only ones that ain't close enough would be Dublin and Steve, but we could Skype them in while we're doing the research.
The thing is, it wouldn't last long, but it would be a prototype. It would prove the theory.
Yeah.
Once you prove the theory, then it would be worth spending the money to have the special parts made out of metals that would take that kind of a strain and the heat. Because you're talking a lot of power.
Yeah.
You're talking about internal combustion engine that would have to withstand the pressure of steam. And, oh my God, look at all your military ships, they run by steam.
Yeah. And those are 650 to 1,250 PSI.
Right, you just need a steam engine and then convert it over to where you can inject water, vapor, into it and inject HHO with a continuous spark.
All you need is a regular car, I guess, and something to time like a fuel injection system, a second rail under pressure, and have it where it times and sprays a certain amount in there. That ought to work it.
There are diesel motors that are made. That, I mean, we're talking plug and play here, okay? That have two injectors. So what you do is modify the injector. One injector to squirt in water. The other injector to squirt in the HHO. And these steam engines, these diesel engines I'm talking about, have a plug bug already in them.
Yeah.
So that's the plug bug. And you time it to where when you're 1 degree, 2 degrees past top dead center, always past. Then you inject your water and your HHO, and your blood sets it off. It's steam on demand engine is what it would be.
I bet you tell you what, running on just that.
Which is this. According to Hollywood, even alien invasions can't sink a battleship.
Yeah.
They did down there in Antarctica.
Well, they didn't when them aliens invaded them into Hollywood.
Yeah. Hollywood's got it made. Yeah, I like that movie where they took the USS Missouri and they dropped the anchor and spun the boat around and then broadsided the alien spaceship. You remember that scene?
Oh, I missed that. You just got me a link on that.
It was so cool, man. I love that show.
But the point being that perhaps the newest isn't the best technology.
Well, and what we're talking about ain't new technology. Amen. It already exists.
Sterling engines. Sterling engines. Your nuclear subs are Sterling engines.
Right, man. Steam on demand. By the way, you put a cooling system on it, you use distilled water. When HHO burns, it turns into water.
Yeah.
So therefore, with a turbo loop system, you'd never lose any of your water. And you would require a whole lot less HHO to run the machine. It would have enough power to make enough electricity to turn some of the water back to HHO. We're talking about a totally self-contained unit.
I heard Larry in the background a second ago.
Distilled water is dead.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
You need to use zero dissolved solids water.
You're 100% right, Larry.
So
but you'd never lose.
So what's it going to take to get us all together and to do a prototype?
Where are you? Where is this?
I'm in Missouri, so I'm close enough. We're all close enough. Larry's close enough, and you know
we can hit Shaziz, Terry, Larry, all in the same run. We might even get the snag Thomas.
What about Terry Wood, Woodward? He's in Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm saying we could set a time and date, grab everybody up, build it, put all the designs out there, and everybody will have it, you know?
Larry, you're in Missouri, right?
Yes, sir. I'm about 40 minutes away from Shaziz.
Yeah. Real sure I can get on a plane and cook.
Well, there you go. And make sure you liquor it up while you're cooking.
You guys have power.
So I want to see them Chinese woman's muffins there.
Sir, you would probably be the place to do this.
You could be, I guess, though. Yes, sir.
Missouri would be extremely convenient for us.
Well, yeah. I got plenty of room for everybody, and we can make this happen.
Let's do it.
I'm in.
I sleep in the lab.
I don't care.
I got a tent and a sleeping bag.
I got a camper, two separate houses, two guest rooms. We got plenty of room.
Oh, Lord, that's the worst of the world, my boy. I got trucks and trailers.
Let's just do it, man, because, you know, even if we're using old technology, any device is better than no device.
We'll have to bring my wife to keep me in line.
It's all right. She'll have company with my wife. Everybody bring their wife.
You got a big teddy bear she hits me with. Clobbers.
Hey, playing around, the women can get together and share recipes. We'll all benefit then.
No, the women can get together and tell you to stop wasting your time and get on with it.
are you like you said we needed to do?
All right, here's the plan.
Give the women $100 to go blow. And say,
here's the plan, y'all start checking your schedules and matching schedules up to see when we can do this thing together. And while you're getting your schedule situated, match up what kind of parts we're going to need, what particular engine block we're going to need to modify, injectors, anything we need to gather up, whether it be from your side or my side. And by the time we get together, we'll have the tools and the all the parts that we need to work it out. What do you think?
I think we can get Boomer's pontoon boat going that way.
Cool.
Yep.
I think it would be better to do it with a Wankel engine, a three-cylinder engine, rotary engine.
I like it.
I think that would be a more efficient way to do it.
I like that idea.
Larry, look for a Crash Triumph. They use a lot of Wankel engines.
Look into here because, I mean, you're going to get power on every downstroke because you're not putting fuel in it until it's at the top. You're getting power on the downstroke. And that pop opens up and exhausts because it's under pressure. So they don't think it would work right.
Well, the rotary engine's brilliant.
Yes, it is.
And then as far as control.
Wankel and rotary, same thing, different guy.
far as control and stuff like that, what type of transmission do those rotary engines have attached to them?
Both. Standard and automatic?
Well, I'd say an automatic would probably be the best go, because if we're going to be running a generator head, we'd want it to be able to shift out by itself. So I think an automatic transmission would be the best go on that one.
Yeah.
If you're looking for diesel engines, I look for a marine engineer.
Think about this, fellas. Your accelerator, all it would be is control of the amount of water and HHO you put into the engine.
Well, then that's an easy enough do. We can use a valve for that.
Steering device on your jets. That's all it would take.
Well, I'm hip. I'm in it to win it. So if you guys want to get together and build this thing, we can get it out there to the average Joe, and they'll have themselves the plans and idea to do it, you know?
Yep.
Because we're not gonna get any of this via any mainstream. We're just going to have to do it, you know? It's just like the other generator that I'm talking about, using plasma and the Van de Graaff and the Wimshurst design and the static engine. I know this can be built. But this one that we're talking about right here seems to me like a simpler, quicker solution to actually get something done. What do you guys think?
I think we're going to have to do a little research on the HHO spark plug, too. That probably help out a lot.
Yeah, well, while we're getting ready and getting our schedules together and gathering up all the supplies that we're going to need, then we can also do the research, and when we bring all of our research together, we can sit down and troubleshoot the best option in order to make this thing function the way we're talking about.
I think we should work on a, find a small motor, I don't care if it's a weed eater motor or a little four-stroke lawnmower engine, play around with it so we got our ideas together when we get there.
Well, I've got weed eater motors.
Oh, I got bunches of them.
So either way, we have the technology, together we have the brain power, and we got the space to do it, so if you guys are interested, I'm interested, and we'll just start planning.
I'm more than interested. I'm ready.
Oh yeah, you know Boomer's ready. When we talked about getting that Boomtown power and light together and playing with HHO, man, he ain't stopped. He's still going.
And I've got some ideas on how to design the hydrogen cells to where they actually don't use as much amperage, and you'll get actually more hydrogen out of it. I've seen tons and tons of videos on it, and I see a flaw in their system, and the reasons why they're draining so much amperage and stuff like that. I believe one of the problems is the distance between the actual plates and the thickness of the plates themselves, and the quantity of the plates. I think you could
1 millimeter thick, 12 plates, 3 millimeter separation.
Yeah.
Bumps on the plates rather than holes.
Yeah.
Hold firm.
So
Larry, I made a HHO generator out of beer cans, and it's a 12-volt, 12-amp battery.
All right.
It wasn't very efficient, but it worked. It works enough to blow the lid off of a 1 liter jar with about half a liter of hydrogen gas in it, 30 feet in the air.
Cool.
Wow. Do that on the 4th of July.
Yeah, my flashback arrest the failed.
I saw a guy that had polarized the hydrogen, put a whole bunch of it in a plastic bag, and set it off electrically.
Oh, Christ.
When he set it off, what amazed me most was that an electrical charge followed the wire back to his igniter.
Yeah. You have to be so careful with hydrogen, it is so explosive.
Yeah, he did it in the courtyard, ran his wire out to it to electronically ignite it, and when he set his spark off, another spark, as soon as the hydrogen ignited, followed that wire back to him.
Wow.
But if we're not storing it and we're using it on demand like Stan Myers was doing, then I don't think we're going to have any problems with any explosions except for controlled ones inside the pistons.
You got to have a flashback arrestor no matter what.
Oh, definitely.
A Kotex in a tube will do it.
Yep.
A tampon in a tube will do it.
So, with that said, we got the tools and technology, and we're on it.
Good thing we're bringing the women.
Yeah.
Ah! Well, all right, let's keep it clean.
Make them go and buy the supplies.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Keep it clean.
Gosh, Jesus, get your mind out of the gutter. I'm sorry, Larry, but a cigarette filter in a tube works just as well.
Yeah.
Although mine didn't work so as well as I'd liked it to. Especially when it blew up 3 feet from your head.
Oh, well,
3 foot from your head?
Yeah,
I felt like Quasimodo. The bells were ringing for days.
Yeah, how long did it take you to be able to understand somebody while they're talking?
Fortunately, my mother wasn't at home when it happened. As I said, don't do it at home, do it at somebody else's. But seriously, guys, if you're going to play with HHO, be very careful.
Walk into their living room, trust me.
No, do it outside. According to the books, hydrogen gas accelerates to about 46 miles an hour and keeps going straight up, and it doesn't stop when it hits space, it just keeps going. No, according to the books.
Cool. Everybody,
well, you are a rocket scientist.
Everybody, with all your contacts, everybody, get a hold of all your contacts and tell them what we're up to, and see if they're interested and what they have to bring to the table and all that kind of stuff. And you'll probably have to bring a few tools with you, because I got tools, but I don't know if I got every tool we need. And what we don't have, I know where a machine shop is in the neighborhood. And so, with that said, we can, even if we have to custom make some parts or even custom make the entire engine, we can do it.
9 minutes, 24 seconds. If you go to a tool shop, Shaziz, and tell them that you're trying to do the impossible,
there's a good
chance
that they'll make it for
you. And do you have a plasma torch?
No, I don't have no plasma torch, but the machine shop does.
I'm telling him a plasma torch.
Yeah, bring one of yours.
Cool.
Yeah, a drill press.
So, we're down to the
Do you have a drill press, she says.
Oh, yeah, I got a small one.
Okay, I'll bring my magnetic drill press and my annular drill bit. I can drill about 2 inch diameter hole through 1 inch solid steel, no problem.
Cool, and I got tap and die sets.
Good.
So, with that said, we're down to the last 9 minutes of the show, and it's been brilliant with exception of all the technical difficulties, and I think we got it made on this sound deal, hopefully.
Yeah, they said they could hear us just a little low, but that's all right. People turn their volume up, wouldn't know the difference.
All right, well, we'll get that sorted out for the next time around, but either way, if everybody wants to go around and have their last say there, who wants to start?
I'll start if you like, Shaziz.
All right, go ahead.
On Mad Science and Knights of the Round Table, we might be wrong, and we might be right, but who else is making the effort? That's the question you have to ask yourself.
Nobody, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, there's a lot of people out there making the effort, but you rarely hear them on mainstream news.
Well,
if it wasn't Mad Science and Knights of the Round Table and all the other people that are doing their own thing all over the world, and there's millions of them.
Yeah,
literally millions.
You're correct. In the alternative energy community, there are millions of people, and that's what the Knights of the Round Table is hoping to do, is to bring them together as the dream team and get it done. You know what I mean?
But if we've got new listeners coming in and they're wondering, what's this all about? We could be right. We could be wrong. But we're trying our best to find out.
Yep.
At least we're trying.
Yeah.
You don't know what works until you find out a lot of things that don't.
Exactly.
You don't know what works until it explodes 3 feet from your head.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's
I've never made a mistake. I've had some learning experiences.
All right, so who's next?
I guess I'll... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Raymond.
You were speaking of ammonia refrigeration earlier, and I'm now speaking of mistakes. Basically, when it was first developed, somebody's house leaked full of ammonia and killed his whole family.
Ooh.
That's what basically outlawed it and put it under such heavy relationship. You really got to be careful with that stuff, guys.
Right. We can leave it outside. I got one outside anyway. Good idea. Thank you.
All right, who's next?
Never tried this at home. Try it at somebody else's.
Yeah.
Trust
me. Right, right. Mommy is dangerous. So when we do it, we just need to take some precautions. That's all.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing about anything. It's dangerous.
Just but it'd be great for my shop.
Yeah.
No problem. A thing of propane will last me a doggone well over 2-3 months.
All right,
sweet.
We're down to 6
anyway,
minutes.
Oscar La Bow Wow, think outside the box, not in the box. In the box rots, outside the box rocks. So,
yeah.
Enough said. Muddy out.
What about you, Larry?
Keep up the good work, guys. All of us are plugging away from our different directions and we're going to the same place. And it's all going to work.
All right. Well, Devlin, you got anything last? We're short on time here, brother.
Yeah, no, brilliant show. Love it. Keep the work, guys.
All right, everybody. Well, you've heard from the Knights of the Round Table, and it sounds like we got a plan to actually get a working generator off of HHO and use an old technology to get something started while we work on the more high-tech versions of the stuff. And so I apologize for all the technical difficulties earlier, and hopefully we get that sorted out before the next show. If you're a researcher out there in alternative energy, then come on and join the Dream Team, and we're going to get together. We're going to put something together for the world and hopefully make the world a better place. I can't say it any better than that. It's the ideas. Keep these ideas a-flowing, and this is your platform to do so. Just by showing up in the chat room, you become an honorary Knight of the Round Table. You can post links of information. And by coming on to the show itself, you become one of the Knights of the Round Table. It's your platform to speak and bring out good pertinent information to benefit the world. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony. Be quiet! But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away!
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system!
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't...
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot. So we're tarp and table, quite indefatigable.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Serve the turbo! Always looking to serve the turbo and the knights of the round table!